From Hanselminutes.com, it's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 261, recorded live Thursday, April 7th, 2011. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Telerik RAD Controls, the most comprehensive suite of components for Windows Forms and ASP.NET web applications. Online at www.telerik.com. In this episode, Scott talks with Phil Hack about the new releases in the Web Platform and Tools Division.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman, and this is another episode of Hansel Minutes, and this is the Hansel Minutes Mixed Keynote Edition. By that, I mean that if you're listening to this, it is after the Mixed Keynote, and Scott Goo has said something on stage. And Phil Hack is here to talk to me about it. How's it going, Phil?
Good. How you doing, Scott?
Chilling. What did we release today, my friend, in the Web Platform and Tools Division?
We released a whole bunch of products. The ones near and dear to me are ASP.NET MVC 3 Tools Update, which includes NuGet 1.2. But I believe we also released new versions of IIS Express and ASP.NET web pages and web matrix. I can't even list
Entity
them all.
Framework 4.1. The web stack of love is complete.
Yeah, exactly. We've been working real hard on that and pretty tired.
Yeah, absolutely. So ASP.NET MVC 3, but you said tools refresh, and you said it really slowly like it was important. What does that mean? What is the tools refresh?
Well, we're calling it a tools update, but, you know, same thing, right?
Tools update.
What it means is that the runtime has not changed at all. So this is, we just released ASP.NET MVC 3 in January.
Mm-hmm.
And that, releasing, that was kind of a quick release from MVC 2. It was less than a year away. And a lot of times people, you know, have this tension when we release a new version of the framework because it's something new to learn. Do they need to upgrade all their existing systems?
Mm-hmm.
Do people need to write books or articles about it and so on? And so releasing a framework too often can, you know, a fully RTM-supported framework too often can often cause tension. So we wanted to make it clear that this release is not a new version of the MVC runtime, the MVC framework. Instead, what we did is we took all the great tooling that we had and we improved it. And we added things like scaffolding into the MVC 3 tooling. So now, if you go in and add controller, and you select one of your model types, we can scaffold the data access code, assuming Entity Framework code first, which is also in the box now, and build out your CRUD, your create, read, update, and delete views.
Okay, so there's the stuff that happens at runtime, and that's what you call the MVC runtime. Those are the bits that you install on your server. And then there's the stuff that happens before you compile. So this is a refresh to all that stuff that happens before you compile. Dialog boxes, right-click menus, and all that stuff. You said scaffolding. I did a demo at PDC where I took some stuff that David Ebo and David Fowler did and kind of wrote some scaffolding with T4 in the command line. And I know that then Steve Sanderson joined the team. And the first thing that Steve Sanderson did was work on scaffolding. Was that like part of a larger master plan that spanned centuries? Or was that one of those things where something that, you know, you as the PM for MVC said, hey, this would be cool. Let's take this thing that Ebo and Fowler and those guys are messing with and just make it in the product. Or were they doing it because it was part of the master plan?
A little of both, I'd say. I think the master plan all along has always been to have scaffolding in the product, right? And I could show balsamic mock-ups of that from years ago. And it was just a matter of, you know, timing and other priorities coming up and wanting to get the framework to a good point where we felt it was reasonably baked. And then, the time is right now to bring in scaffolding. What the part that I think is a little more serendipity is how NuGet figures into it. So we released NuGet, and suddenly people were writing all these really cool packages like Fowler and Sanderson, where they added really cool commands to the PowerShell console that NuGet brings into Visual Studio.
Right.
So a package like MVC Scaffolding, you can install it, and it adds these really cool new commands like Scaffold Controller. And then we had this thought of, what if we built scaffolding into the product and we give you a default scaffolding experience, but you could extend that experience by installing NuGet packages such as MVC Scaffolding? And so that's the real cool thing, is if you right-click Add Controller and you look at the drop-down of the different scaffold templates, there's three of them by default. There's like the empty one, which is kind of like what you have before this update. Mm-hmm. There's the scaffold your, you know, CRUD with Entity Framework, Code First, and then there's SCUD, some empty placeholder ones. SCUD. Sorry, scaffold, some empty. SCUD ought to be the new word for that. We'll just use SCUD for short.
CRUD and scaffolding is now SCUD. I think that people who make the missiles might disagree.
Oh, yeah, the SCUD missile. Remember that? Yeah, remember that? Yeah. There.
Okay, so the scaffolding is a concept. There's two separate pieces, though. There's the stuff that's built in, that's underneath the dialog box that ships with it. And then there's the extensibility, because almost every drop-down box in MVC3's tooling is extensible, right? That's been something that you've been talking about since MVC1, the testing drop-down, the views drop-down, and now the controller scaffolding drop-down.
That's right. That's right. So what happens when you install MVC scaffolding, the NuGet package, we add new templates, new scaffolding templates in there. So then you'll get the option, for example, to scaffold your model and controller and views with a repository pattern. Now, someone else can go out there and write their own NuGet package that will add templates in there to scaffold Entity Framework or Subsonic, or now there's a new one called Dapper. So, you know, you could, whatever framework data access technology you like, you can write a T4 template for it that will integrate into our Add Controller dialog, and you can get it into there by using NuGet. So it's kind of this nice, you know, all-around story there.
In the past, we've shown people stuff like the test drop-down and said you could put something in here, and we've shown them the views drop-down. But I haven't felt like those things really kind of exploded. They never really became huge. Like four or five really big projects got in those drop-downs, you know, like NUnit and things, and MBUnit, and on the view side, things like Spark. Do you think that's because of the nature of the things that were extensible, like testing frameworks and views, that caused those not to like fill up with 100 different options? And do you think this will be different?
Yeah, I think it is the nature of those things. Like there aren't 100 different unit test frameworks, right? And there's only very few. So that in a way, that the people who would write a custom unit test dialog are very few. And also, we haven't really made the experience super easy yet. You know, we figured that's more of an advanced end case. But even with the test dialogue, I do see good uses of the average person, like the non, you know, I'm not a person who writes unit test frameworks, but I can take the existing test framework, add in my own test libraries into there, and now I have a new custom one. Mm-hmm. In my mixed talk, I'm planning to show an example. One of the other things that's extensible is, when you click new MVC3 project, you actually get a list view of different project types. And in the tools update, we added a new one called Intranet Project. And I always tell people, you can put your own custom project templates in there. So in my talk, I'm going to actually show you how, because that's one of the things that's been missing is, oh, yeah, you can put something in there, but I don't have time to show you how to do it. So I'll show you how to do it. And then things like with scaffolding, I think you will see a little more, because people have strong opinions of how the code should get generated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of white space in that dialog box. It'd be nice to start putting stuff in there.
Yeah, and we're slowly doing that over time, right? When we introduced it in MVC3, there was two. Now with the tools update, there's three. Maybe if we release a tools update, there'll be four or five.
Well, that would, releasing a tools update would be incredibly Microsofty of us to do. We'd have to call it the September refresh tools update.
I think if we did that, it would probably drive me to my deathbed.
Now, why didn't you call it MVC 3.1?
You know, we thought about that, but we received a lot of feedback when we kind of ran that by insiders and MVPs that it made them feel tense. kind of what I was talking about earlier, it made them feel like it's a revision to the framework, and thus now it's something more that they're going to get asked about, and people are going to have confusion about, oh, what framework am I on? You know, I deployed MVC3 to my server. Are you on 3 or are you on 3.1? Mm-hmm. And we're like, well, no, 3.1 is the same framework. Oh, I didn't know that. You know, like, so we wanted to avoid that situation. So we call it tools update to make it crystal clear, at least we hope, crystal clear that there's no runtime changes. So we hope nobody ever asks the question, oh, what do you have on your server? Do you have MVC3 or MVC3 tools update? Because it's the same server assembly.
You know, I'm noticing that there's lots of new stuff coming out. I've been using this metaphor lately about Lego pieces, right? And how before we used to release these big Lego pieces and just kind of like drop them on you and be like, brr, here's SharePoint, you know, brr, it's a huge Lego piece.
SharePoint right? is more like a fully constructed Lego.
Yeah, fully completed model, right? Glued together. But, you know, but lately though, with, you know, with OData, with these smaller pieces, NuGet, IS Express, SQL Compact, Entity Framework, There's something that's happening. Things are happening out of band, right? Out of band is what we mean when we say not at the same time as Visual Studio. Remember, Visual Studio 2010 came out, was it last October?
Yeah.
So that's not very long ago. So yeah, Visual Studio 2010 came out last year, right? Last October or last April? Has it been a year?
It's last October, I think. You're right.
Yeah, I think it was last October. Anyway, the point is, Visual Studio 2010 came out, and stuff keeps coming out. So I think that there's two interesting things about that. One, which is what is the public's ability to absorb this much stuff?
Mm-hmm.
Right? You know, is there too much too fast? And then there's mm-hmm. also the idea that I don't know what version of what thing fits together and works together and what version of what thing I have, because there's SQL Compact 4, Entity Framework 4.1, MVC 3. Do you think that there's a need to like draw a circle around it and name it? Or are people already used to using stacks that are not Microsoft that have all different versions and all different names?
That's a really good question. I kind of like a little bit of both. I sort of group products into different types of things. You know, like you could call it the angst level, right? When a new version of a browser comes out, the angst level is relatively low because it's just something you use, right? You don't have mission-critical systems deployed on a browser in the same way you would on a framework version. So a new framework version comes out. Okay,
yeah,
you give
do.
Me this load.
Yeah, that's not a good example. Because if maybe, your browser...
Okay, that's a bad example.
That's why I don't like Chrome updating every week, because what if it breaks my intranet site?
Okay, good point. I'm thinking more along the lines of, yeah.
I mean, if CNN.com
breaks, Chrome comes out
yes,
every month,
matter.
Right? And nobody, like, you know, loses a wink of sleep about that. but if a new version of Windows came out every month, you would lose a lot of sleep because everything runs on it, right? Like your web server runs on it. Now, intranet issue aside, what an intranet typically would do is just ignore those releases, right? And say, we're on this version.
Yeah, they would do testing and they'd roll it out.
Yeah, and they roll it out. So ignore all these other ones, we don't care.
Right.
But there's
a testing burden there, right? I mean, Chrome does come out every month, or depending on what branch you're on, every week. And Ubuntu comes out every 6 months, like clockwork. Mm-hmm. You know, Windows seems to be coming out every year or two. Three, depending on how you want to look at it, there's service packs and stuff. But like NuGet, you guys are releasing new versions of NuGet monthly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a couple of
give
things to deal with. Was that?
As a give or take, you know, a couple weeks here and there, but yeah.
Sure.
That's what we'd like to do for now.
Hi, this is Scott coming to you from another place in time. Are you using agile practices to manage your software development? There's lots of tools in the market that manage the steps of a project, but most of them focus on individual roles. Get ready for a solution that caters for the success of the whole team. The guys at Telerik introduced TeamPulse. It's an agile project management tool that'll help you gather ideas, estimate, plan, track progress in a common workspace. Finally, companies, regardless of their size, can use a lightweight and convenient tool that makes all the stakeholders work as a united team, even if they're in different countries. By combining intuitive user interface and the power of Silverlight, TeamPulse removes the roadblocks that you typically face in applying Agile in an effective manner. No more lost data, no disparate systems, no lack of critical analytics regarding the health and velocity of your project. See for yourself. Get a free copy for 5 users and 1 project at Telerik.com/TeamPulse. And please do thank Telerik for supporting Hansel Minutes on their Facebook fan page, Facebook.com/TELERIK, Telerik. We do appreciate it. There wouldn't be a Hansel Minutes if there wasn't Telerik helping us. So there's a couple of things to deal with there. There's the public has to understand what version they're on, or as people might argue in the instance of things like Chrome, they don't. Right? If your update system is absolutely effective in that everyone gets updated, then you can bury the version number. Do you hope to get things like NuGet that are more kind of utilities to the point where they'll automatically update themselves and people won't even think about it?
Yeah. So that's a really good example. Like NuGet compared to MVC, right? MVC, I don't think we would release an RTM version every month, right? Because that would just drive people nuts. You know, like what version am I on? Like that's the kind of thing that you kind of have to know. And people wouldn't want their production servers automatically updating to the latest monthly release of MVC. Whereas NuGet is, as you succinctly put it, is before the compile, right? MVC is after the compile. NuGet before the compile. So things that happen before the compile, you have a little more leeway in releasing often. And so one of the things we're looking at in NuGet is for the next version of NuGet, we're going to put in our own check to make sure that, to tell you whether you're on the latest version or not. So we're going to make it a little more in your face so you notice it. Mm-hmm. But we're not at the point where we feel comfortable auto-updating you simply because people might have NuGet integrated into their build systems and they might want to kind of like with the intranet, they might want to lock on a particular version for a period of time. Mm-hmm. But most developers who are just, you know, coding on open source projects at home or their own projects or working in small shops may want to just always take the latest version. And there's a lot of benefits to taking the latest version. For example, sometimes we introduce new features into packages themselves. So if you build a package, for example, with NuGet 1.2 and you use one of the new features of NuGet 1.2 in your package, you can't install that package with 1.1.
Oh, I see. So the package, at the time you try to install it, you'll say, sorry, this has a feature that uses 1.2. You need to upgrade.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah, and there's different models for upgrades. Like there's the Xbox model where basically it's forced, right? You're all on the latest version. And then there's the Windows update model where you get to choose, but they try to push it on you. And then there's the different types of Firefox extension modules where we'll just nag you about the extension, about the update. And we're kind of trying to figure out what's the best one, which one will users be okay with. Mm-hmm. And right now we think we'll try this thing where we make it a little more noticeable and hope that people will be and continue to provide compelling features so that you'll really want to upgrade to the latest version.
Right. Speaking of updates, the web platform installer came out version 3 a little while back. And one of the things that was a little bit interesting about this last kind of this bundle release that we've got here, right, is if you go to to the ASP.NET website and you go to the downloads page, we released actually a new refreshed version of the ASP.NET website. We'll be updating the styles and making it prettier in the future, but we redesigned the MVC web pages and web forms learning centers. Mm-hmm. On them are links to download this stuff. And this is something that I think is interesting about this bundle is that there's really no easy way to kind of get it all, or at least there isn't an obvious one, maybe because we're not telling enough people. But it turns out that the best way to get all of this stuff is Web Platform Installer. I think a lot of people thought it was going to be in Service Pack 1. But it was going to we call it slipstreaming, right? It was going to, you install Service Pack 1 of Visual Studio, and you get all of this stuff. And there were a lot of discussions back and forth about whether that was a good idea, right? Do you give them all the new stuff in a service pack, or do you fix the bugs primarily? And then they go and they hunt the new stuff down.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I mean, in Windows, in .NET 3.5 SP1, we imposed new stuff upon them because it came along for the ride, but it also made for a very large service pack.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the camp, and this is just my personal opinion. I don't get to make those decisions. Way above my pay grade, but I'm in the camp that a service pack should focus mostly on bug fixes. You know, it might have a little bit of new stuff, like maybe especially like improvements to existing user experiences, But I really don't like cramming a bunch of features in, because those features then may themselves have bugs that would be patched in the future service pack, right? And right. I'd rather have the full-on versions have the new stuff, and then in between ship stuff out of band.
Right, right. The more stuff you sneak into a service pack, the more stuff the next service pack has to fix. If there's
yeah, exactly.
But on the ASP.NET website, if you click on that big button, what it'll do is it'll launch Web Platform Installer, and this is actually a new what they call a new application ID. It's a new bundle that we released today. This is custom. And what this will do is, if you have nothing on your machine, it will give you the free version of Visual Studio, all of these tools, and Service Pack 1 all at once. But if you have Visual Studio
on
you...
Pro Pack?
Right. This is a custom build of the Pro Pack. Before, you had to pick Visual Studio Express or Pro. You had to tell them, and sometimes people would end up, like I have on my machine right now, both Visual Studio Express, the free version, and Visual Studio Ultimate, because Visual Studio Express got installed one time when I ran a link from the ASP.NET website. I said, oh, I want the free tools, and I got a bunch of stuff I didn't want. So we have a new link on the page that will automatically do the right thing. It'll update you to Service Pack 1, give you all the latest tools. That means IIS Express, Compact Edition 4, tools for that, MVC 3 and new tools, NuGet, Entity Framework, everything. And it won't automatically put Visual Studio Express on your machine unless you explicitly want it.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
Yeah, it's then they're calling it kind of the Pro Pack. You know, I call it the Web Platform of Love. But the point is, it's the
we ought
for
to
me
be naming our products. I like your names better,
dude. If Microsoft named stuff like Magic Unicorn and the Entity Framework, the Web Stack of Love, we should. Oh my goodness! At least we got NuGet. That was something.
Yeah.
Right. That could have been. It could have been like .NET Pack or something lame.
Or it could have been Microsoft Package Manager for the .NET Framework.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know why they didn't go with, you know, IIS Awesome Edition, and then they said IIS Express, but whatever. They never listened to us. As you said, it's so much higher above our pay grade.
Yeah, we really need to work harder here at planning these ideas in people's head, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
Just two tired old men trying to make things happen.
Well, you know, we're pushing slowly, and like you and I have always talked about, if we fail to get Microsoft to change, if we push as hard as we can, and we've pushed as hard, and that's it, it's not going to change anymore, then we'll quit. We'll do something else.
Oh, you will. I need that.
You're not going to quit? Well, you moved to Seattle, though, right?
No, I know what you mean. I know what you mean.
You know, I mean, it's just like...
I was thinking, like, I just said we're old, and I know you're going to have callers going to say, you're not old. I was started programming with a slide rule. And someone else will call in and say, I was pair programming with Archimedes. But as hard as we've been working lately to get this stack of love out there, you know, I feel like I've aged a year in the past, you know, 3 months between MVC 3 RTM and this tools update.
It's interesting to watch your gray hair develop.
Oh, no.
Just as a guy watching, you know what I mean, from the outside here, watching your hair turn gray slowly.
It's like before and after pictures of presidents, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's interesting because you so want it to succeed. You know what I mean? We want the stuff to go over well. And, you know, every decision that someone tweets about, like, oh, this sucks. Why'd you do that? You know, there's a story behind it. There's a process behind it. There's the good and the bad. There's, you know, meetings with Scott Gu and meetings with legal and all this kind of stuff to get, you know, even to get a button or a checkbox. And we keep trying to change the processes within Microsoft, but it's slow.
It's slow, and also there's all that extra time you put in. Like there's two levels, right? There's good enough to ship, and then there's how I want it to be, where I think customers will be really excited about it. So like I could design a feature and then say, yeah, it's good enough, that'll ship. But then most of the time I'd like to go the extra effort and say, oh, we need to, you know, really think through how people are going to use this. Let's talk to the customers, obviously. Like what I love about working on NuGet is because it's truly an open source project, we accept external contributions, we have all of our discussions on Coplex, I can really, you know, get feedback really early from people who are out there in the trenches using it in ways I had never anticipated, because as many different ways as there are to write software, there's just as many different ways to build it. And by build, I mean like build systems and what you're trying to automate and what you're trying to do. That, you know, I always thought, oh, I have a lot of experience building software. I know how most people build it. But as I'm going through these discussions with people, they're coming up with different, they have such different range of scenarios and things that they're trying to do that I had never even anticipated. So it's been a really great learning process. And I hope, you know, two things. One, that the community feels like they're really involved. And if they're not, it's so easy. Just get in our discussion, start telling us, you know, what you think we should do. And two, I hope that we're agile enough and iterating enough that we're solving the vast majority of those pain points and creating really great experiences for our customers. That's kind of what makes me motivated in the morning to get back to work, you know?
How much, when you're building the Stack of Love, how much do you think about anymore now that's because you did move from LA up to Seattle about becoming a Microsoft, you know, the Borg? How much do you worry about that? Do you ever catch yourself thinking too much like a classic kind of stereotypical Microsoft person? And do you count on, you know, your friends like me or whoever to tell you, hey, Phil, you're assimilated. You just said that you were super excited about something. Or do you not think about that?
That's a really interesting question. I'll have to process that and make an ask of my manager to see if...
No, but, you know, it's an honest question, though, because sometimes I feel like when a Microsoft person says, you know, I'm really excited to provide customer value, they mean it sincerely, but it comes off as Microsofty. It comes off slimy.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm just saying.
I worry about it to some degree, but, I mean, I feel like I try hard to keep to my roots. I mean, I feel like I'm still a customer because I'm still working on these projects that are my own. Mm. The only problem is I'm so busy at work, I don't get to work on them all that often, like subtext. Yeah. But I still work on it. And when I work on that, I feel I'm back in the customer head. I'm looking at things that are, hey, this is painful. You know, this sucks. And in many respects, like, my motivation isn't, you know, like while I do want to increase customer value, blah, 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 the marketing side. But there's also that side where I feel like all these people are my peers, right? These customers, you know, we call them, but they're my peers, and I'm on Twitter with them, and I'm in, you know, in the blogosphere, if you want to still call it that, with them. And I notice when they're giving me flack, right? I notice when they're complaining about our technologies, and so in many ways, that's part the motivation is like, you know, getting the respect from your peers that. Yeah, you're doing a good job there. You're building pretty cool products. You know, I may disagree with some of the things you're doing, but I think you guys are building great products. And when I hear that kind of feedback, that's really that makes me feel good.
How is feedback? This is kind of a little egotistical question, just because I always wondered and I never had the opportunity to ask you. But what do you think about the feedback that I give you when I go out? I mean, I'm always in the community and I'm talking to people and I'm doing Skype calls all day and I'm doing screen sharing all day and I'm trying to figure out, you know, I talk to a half dozen open source projects a week and I come back and I say, Phil, and I'm usually excited about it. So I'm like, this is a nightmare. I have to click twice instead of once, you know, what the hell are you guys doing over there? What is feedback from me or from the field or from people who are community, people who are trying to make it better? How often do you get frustrated with me where I have unreasonable expectations? Like, you know what I'm saying? I think you know where I'm coming with.
Yeah, yeah. Usually when we get an email from you, we roll our eyes and we forward it amongst ourselves and have a little snicker. Oh, no, another Hanselman firestorm. No, I'm kidding.
Only a little
bit.
Well,
we find it really... What?
You're only kidding a little bit.
Well, sometimes the level of drama, you know, might be... might catch us off guard, but... We definitely, once we cut through the initial, like, oh my God, it's a disaster and we're all going to die, and we look at what the core issue you're bringing up, I mean, most of the time we go and we address it, right? Or we try to address it, or we at least come up with the reason why we can't yet. And it's challenging because most of the times, I think you're right, or we think, yeah, that is an issue. And then there's all these weird circumstances that prevent us from maybe fixing it right away or fixing it ever that... You don't see from the outside, and they're things that are out of our control. And it's not so much that I want to make excuses, right? Like, if I could fix them, even if it costs a lot of my time, I'd go do it.
Yeah.
But, you know, let's say it impinges on some other teams and then I'd have to deal with their VP and then, or, you know, like crazy things can happen.
Well, like
in that
there was
regard,
an example of something, I can't remember exactly what it was, but it was literally a subtle interaction between the ASP.NET tooling, T4, PowerShell, COM, Visual Studio, da, da, da. And it was like, it was a subtle interaction about how all those things behaved. And it literally was like how PowerShell talked to COM, talked to Visual Studio, and something would block for a middle. And I was just like, this is an awful experience. Da, 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 da. And you're like, hey, man, that's a bug that's like so deep inside of Mordor that, you know, when it gets done, it gets done. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And that's actually a great example because sometimes it's a bug that's in Windows or sometimes it's a bug in the .NET framework. And unfortunately, on the outside, not everyone understands these, what we call ship trains, right? There's my Microsoftism, right? We have these ship trains, and some of them go out every 2 years, some of them go out every 3 years, some of them go out every year. And the problem is, like, people don't understand why I can't fix a bug in routing, because they think, oh, routing's part of MVC, and you ship that every year. Why didn't you fix this bug in routing? It's like, well, routing is actually part of core ASP.NET, which is part of the .NET framework, and that ships when it ships, and no amount of me cajoling anyone will change that, right? Like, I could, you know, like, I just, there's nothing I can do there.
And that's when I get all angsty and kind of and dramatic, like,
yeah,
you know what I mean? But at the same time, it happens everywhere. I mean, like, I was talking to Miguel a couple of months ago about sound drivers, and it's like I finally had an Ubuntu machine that worked completely perfect. And then they completely deprecated the sound system, right? So the way that they did sound in Ubuntu changed, and then suddenly my sound card driver wasn't supported, and I haven't had sound ever since. And it's so it's a little comforting. I'm not in any way trying to have some Schadenfreude against Ubuntu. I'm just saying that everybody ships software in a certain way, and things break, and, you know, maybe, hey, your application sucks. Your application doesn't have sound. Well, actually, the core system changed six
well,
months ago.
Well, actually, yeah.
You know what I mean? But it does sound like an equivocation sometimes.
Yeah, it does. But, I mean, yeah, software's hard, and we're constantly trying to make it better, right? And so some of the things of having these monolithic framework releases imposes its own problems. And so, you know, maybe some of the things, that's kind of why we're going more towards the out-of-band model. It solves some of the problems, but it can't solve them all.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's cool. Well, thanks so much for hanging out with me today, Phil. And folks can go up to ASP.NET. They can click on downloads. They can get ASP.NET MVC 3 with the new tooling. MVC scaffolding is going to be kind of baked in there. They can get the new stuff from Steve Sanderson on NuGet. You're going to get NuGet, IIS Express, SQL Compact Edition 4, Entity Framework 4.1, Code First, Magic Unicorn Edition. You can even get, you know, jQuery updates and stuff using NuGet now because of some of the features we didn't actually get a chance to talk about in MVC, where when you go file a new project, there's pre-installed NuGet packages, so updating your scripts is even easier.
Oh, yeah, that's really cool. Can I talk about that, or do we have
yeah,
time?
Yeah, well, real quick, go ahead and end on that. End why that's such an interesting thing.
Oh, okay. So basically, it's this. In MVC 3, we included jQuery, and you know where it got this push to include third-party open-source JavaScript libraries and work with the community on that. But the problem is, by the time we ship, jQuery is on a monthly schedule. By the time MVC ships, the jQuery libraries in the scripts folder are already out of date. So what we realize is it would be really cool is instead of just copying those things into the project templates, we have them as NuGet packages, and we install them. So when you create a new MVC 3 tools update project, you'll get an outdated version of jQuery in there, but it will be installed as a NuGet package. So if you launch NuGet and then you go to click on the updates tab, it'll be as easy as clicking update to go ahead and update those libraries to the latest version. And down the road when all of them are out of date, you can easily update them. And what it saves you from doing is having to go look at the list of script files and look at the list of assemblies we included in the project template and go scouring the web for all the new versions and figuring out, have they been updated? Oh, they're updated. How do I get them in? You know, where do I download it? Where do I copy it? You just go in, click update, and it'll update it for you. So that's really cool, and pretty excited about that.
Very cool. All right. Well, we're going to check out all the blogs. I'm sure Scott Gu's keynote and stuff is online by now, and you can go up and watch it all again.
Right.
this has been another episode of Hansel Minutes. We'll see you again next week.